Good morning. Welcome to What's Up Boone County. I appreciate you joining us this mid-May, Mother's Day weekend. Weather has finally turned. We've had a great run of nice days here recently. I know the minute I say that, we could get hail or monsoon winds and rain tomorrow. But for the moment, it's been pretty good recently, and it should be. We're now into the race season. Kentucky Derby's over. NBA playoffs are underway. It's a nice time of the year. But because of the fact that the legislature is now no longer in session, I've invited my friend Senator Brian Buchanan, who represents Senate District 7, which consists of most of us in Boone County, in to talk about the recently completed long session of the General Assembly, how it went, what he thought some of the successes of the legislative term were, and kind of where he stacks up going forward. He's in the middle of a four-year term as our senator from this district, and he's going to stand for election, presumably, in a couple of years. So, Brian, thanks for being our guest this week on What's Up Boone County.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, you're welcome. I appreciate you coming in. Let's talk a little bit about you and your family. Where you live, et cetera. How'd you find your way to Boone County?
Yeah, you know, we actually, my wife and I, we have been married almost 13 years now, and we've been in northern Boone County, going on close to 11 years now, and we really enjoy it, really being a part of the community, and we got two kids, a second grader and a fourth grader, and certainly it's a fun time, but just like everybody else with kids, it's a busy time trying to balance, meeting the needs of the kids and being there for them and work and then legislative activities as well.
Where do your kids go to school?
Go to Thorntown. We're certainly happy there. A great school, a great staff. Really enjoy the teachers there. And my wife really is super involved out there, likes to volunteer at the school and help the teachers where she can. So certainly glad to be part of that school and that organization.
So your career before you got into local and state politics was what, Brian?
Yeah, career. Actually, right now, I work with a family business. We're a logistics trucking company, and we ship stuff all across the country, based out of Indiana here, but certainly go coast to coast and Mexico and Canada, and really enjoy that. My role with the family business, it's sales, try to develop customer accounts, get new accounts, and it's been fun to be a part of that. My dad started the company almost 25 years ago with one truck, one semi truck, and one trailer, and we've grown quite a bit now. Have close to 300 trucks and trailers, and also a brokerage as well, where we actually kind of the sales agents for other companies. It's just been really good to be a part of that and watch that grow. And prior to that as well, something people may not know is I worked for FFA, used to be Future Farmers of America. Worked for the state organization doing fundraising, really have a passion for agriculture and young people and what FFA and the leadership opportunities it can provide. So
you were a staff person at the FFA?
I was, yeah, staff person for FFA. And my role primarily was there 8 years, just under 8 years, was doing fundraising, trying to go out and talk to people and convince them to support the organization. Which is really pretty easy if you take some of the great FFA members in the state, have them talk to them, and kind of sells itself, frankly.
Well, the FFA is a perfect example of what I would call a broad category of social service organization. Mm-hmm. Has a niche, it has a mission, it has a sector that it focuses on, but they provide real value to those young people who want to have careers in agriculture, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, agriculture, if they decide they want to go another career path, but it teaches those essential skills of how to work with others, how to problem solve, how to identify the problem, how to get along with others, but also staying on your principles and your values, and just a lot of skills of how to be successful in life. It teaches those skills, and again, those skills are applicable regardless of a job or career an individual chooses.
Well, you started as a county council member, mm-hmm. and then you were appointed through a caucus process or a precinct committeeman process, whatever, to replace Senator Hirschman. How long have you actually now been in the state Senate?
Been in the Senate 5 years, and again, going back to 2018, and certainly enjoy it, and it's been a fun process to be involved with.
How would you describe it differently than what you thought? Or is it pretty much what you expected it to be after 5 years?
You know, that's an excellent question. I'm not sure what I exactly expected. I will say coming in, I didn't exactly, you know, you kind of know generally what you do. You set laws, you set regulations. As far as how that process works, and, you know, one thing people don't realize is just how many times a bill has to be voted on in the affirmative to become law. You know, you got your committee process, got your second reading, third reading, and then you kind of repeat that whole process on the House side if it's a Senate bill, and vice versa if it's a House bill. But one of the things I always like to tell people, there are a lot of great people in the Indiana General Assembly. And I know sometimes politics in general these days, that there's a bad rap just with any level of politics, but a lot of good people there, I'd say all good people, who have really good intentions. We may have different opinions, different ideas, but we all have good intentions and want to try to move Indiana forward. And with the General Assembly, I always remind people, we are a part-time legislature, which, as I just mentioned, I have a full-time job as well. So does every one of my other colleagues, or if they're retired, they certainly had a career. But the neat thing I like about that is it forces us, once we pass a law, we actually have to go home and live with the law. So whatever we pass, we got to go home, and it affects our everyday lives, our business, our schools, just like every other citizen in Indiana.
How much, I know you send out questionnaires periodically, and I'm sure you look at those, but how much input do you get from the rank and file citizen or constituent of your district? How much input would you say you have from the guy on the street?
Oh, you know, it generally, that's all over the board. A lot of people do email or give a phone call. I give my cell phone. I'll give my cell phone to anybody. I would personally much rather have a phone conversation, a 5-minute phone conversation, versus going back and forth on email, because you can actually put context behind what you're trying to explain. But we get quite a bit of input. It's not unlikely that I won't hear from a good number of people. I don't know how to say if that's 10 or if that's 100, but depending on what the issue is. But I also personally try to actively seek out if there's somewhat of a controversial issue, try to seek out whether it be an issue that may affect the county, contact some of my county commissioners or council people, or may call some school board members and just be like, hey, how does this affect? Because some issues are pretty cut and dry. You know where you're going to stand on them. You know, hey, I can vote for this, or boy, I really don't like this. But there's a lot of issues that are pretty complex, and you want to better understand what does this mean, and that's where I'll personally try to reach out to individuals and see what their take on it is.
Some of this stuff is pretty complicated, is it not?
It is, and that's one of the things that I always like to say. In the world we're in today, a lot of people like to break things down to a Twitter soundbite or a Facebook soundbite or a soundbite on the radio, and I'm like, issues are just more complex, more complicated. Not everything is. It's just a little soundbite. There's way more to it. Every piece of legislation we pass generally has 4, 5, 6 unintended consequences. So you just don't look at the issue at hand, but you look at, okay, this, you pass this, this could happen, that could happen, or if you don't pass it, you try to look down the road, and it's way more complex, and that's where we just try to make the best decisions possible.
You're listening to What's Up Boone County this May weekend, talking to Senator Brian Buchanan. Represent Senate District 7, consisting of Boone County and, for the most part, and Montgomery and Clinton County. So let's talk about the recently completed long session. That's long in the sense it's longer in a number of days than the short session every other year. What were the big takeaways from this last legislative session, Senator?
Yeah, well, I would say you always got to start with the budget. It's one of the two things constitutionally we're required to do, is to set a state budget, appropriate funds for a state government to operate.
And you've got all sorts of people with their hand out looking for part of that budget money, don't you?
We do. It's amazing how many conversations you have. Senator Mishler's our appropriations chair on the Senate side, and how many people come and, you know, hey, I got an idea, it only costs $10 million or $20 million. Well, there are a lot of good ideas, a lot of ideas you'd like to fund, but the problem is if you fund all of them, you'd probably find yourself in a deficit. And we're very fortunate here in Indiana that we do have a surplus. We have a AAA credit rating, and which people may or may not understand, but allows us to do projects and conduct business at a much more cost-effective manner. But the budget was one that it was good. I know there's obviously not everybody got what they wanted, but I always like to remind people with the state budget, roughly half the money, we're just under 50% this year, went to the K-12 education. Excited about that. And then you throw on another roughly 15% went to higher education. So you're almost two-thirds of the budget went to education. And then the reason, actually, for the first time I can remember, K-12 went below 50% is we've seen a tremendous increase in Medicaid. And Medicaid is increasing quite a bit. And that was, again, about 17-18% of the budget. So with the budget, you know, I always take out education, you take out health care. There's quite frankly not a lot left to run state government.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, if two-thirds of the money goes to education, either K-12 or higher, and then another almost one-fifth goes to Medicaid,
yeah,
there's just not a lot of discretionary money to divide up among all of the various legitimate needs of state or local government.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, you got to keep in mind. You take out all that, you still got to run, okay, your state parks. You got to do construction on highways, run state police, public safety. There's a lot there still got to be ran with not a lot there. But the budget was something that we were able to pass and get there. We also, a couple other themes for the session, since you're asking. One of them was healthcare. Healthcare was a big theme, and really we have high healthcare costs here in Indiana, and trying to dive into that, I'm not sure we've made as much headway.
Why do you think we have such high healthcare costs here?
Well, if you look at the aggregate per person, how much we spend, take our total population, total spend on healthcare, it's higher than, actually we're in the top 10 as far as expenses. I don't know exactly. We're trying to dive into it, but one of the things is we generally are, our smoking rate's higher here in Indiana. How much it costs to treat people if there's obesity underlying issues, which is one of the questions we're looking into is how does that affect? A lot of people think that it affects it greatly. So we're trying to do quite a few things. Again, I'm not sure we really hit the nail on the head with making progress, but I certainly think we made some progress.
What about mental health? We talk about mental health a lot. It comes up in the context of crime and gun control. We hear a lot of conversation about that, and then it usually morphs into mental health concerns. What can the state do, or what's it trying to do with the mental health crisis, if there is one?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I would say with mental health, we took some strides. Actually, Senate Bill 1, which was generally, Senate Bill 1 through 7 or 8 are kind of our top priorities. Senate Bill 1 deals with mental health, and it's an issue. And one of it is trying to recognize the stigma and trying to, you know, if there's people that need treatment, get them treatment. But we're trying to provide more resources. A lot of those resources are focused on people who are, you know, in jail or in prison. A lot of people we find that are in jail or in prison don't need to be locked up, but they need mental health treatment. You talk to any law enforcement officer across Indiana, any prosecutor, a lot of them say these aren't necessarily violent people, dangerous people, but they just need mental health treatment who may make some poor decisions time to time. So we're putting more resources behind it, and particularly getting out into some of these counties, not just where you got to be around Indianapolis or Lafayette or Evansville to get it, but you can get it anywhere in Indiana. And hopefully we're making some progress there, take a little bit of time to work out, But that's our goal, is more mental health resources and treatment available.
And that may result in more treatment facilities or clinics available even locally to help people who have a need but haven't been able to get the help they need because they don't have the funding or they don't have access to a professional, correct?
Yeah, spot on. That was our goal. And, you know, it will take a few years to kind of see if we actually – you know, got it right here, but I definitely think it's a positive step forward.
All right, well, we're going to continue our conversation with Senator Brian Buchanan about other issues locally, including the LEAP district. We're going to spend a couple of minutes talking about that after we take a moment to hear from our sponsors. We're back with What's Up Boone County this Mother's Day weekend, 2023, talking with State Senator Brian Buchanan. Brian, here locally in Boone County for the last year or so, there's been a lot of conversation about the proposed LEAP district, which is an idea fashioned by the Indiana Economic Development Corporation, and it's in various states of approval. It's already led to the securing of an Eli Lilly site there on the northwestern side of Lebanon that's now under construction. The state obviously played a big role in the creation of this district. You've probably been contacted by people, as all of us have. What's your take on this economic development incentive project?
Yeah, well, I think it's certainly exciting for the area. It's going to bring a lot of opportunities, a lot of good jobs, and then you have the amenities, the additional shopping, restaurants, recreational opportunities that come with it. And it is something that I've heard from a lot of people on. You know, I say it's not uncommon to get a phone call from somebody wanting to talk about it or have questions about it. And I probably get, you know, 3 or 4 phone calls still a week from people. Or if you're out at my son's Little League game or a basketball game or something, generally people want to talk about it. So I understand some of the reservations as far as where people can stand on it. But I also think where we're located in Boone County, there's going to be some type of development, and I would rather have a high-end, well-planned, well-thought-out development than just random development that pops up and, you know, may not be the quality jobs that we're seeking.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, I think you take that new interchange that's going to be built there at 300 and I-65 on the northwest side of Lebanon. When the state decided to upgrade that interchange and make that an access to the highway, We know that it's going to become something other than agriculture. Mm-hmm. It's either going to be a McDonald's, fast food, a truck stop, a warehouse, or more, one or more, or some sort of a multifamily housing or residential development. It isn't going to remain agriculture as growth goes north along I-65. So if you have the choice of one of those things that I just mentioned or Eli Lilly corporate campus, I would think most people would say, well, I'd rather have the Eli Lilly corporate campus. Now, there are some that don't want the Lilly project, I know, but I would think they surely would rather have the Lilly campus than acres and acres of warehouses and mobile home parks and fast food. The taxes, the jobs, the economic benefits of the Lilly project far outweigh anything else that would be available. But you are losing some farmland, and you are inconveniencing some people, are we not?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I hear from people, and I understand that the farmland loss. My background, I mentioned I work for the family business logistics, but also I have relatives that farm, and certainly sensitive to that. I understand that, but I also think we can do both. I think we can have development as well, like we're having, and continue to produce, you know, a crop to feed the world. But that's where, you know, we got to continue to engage more people in the conversation, have dialogue, have discussion. And I agree with your comment. You went back to, and I mentioned as well, rather have high-end planned out development than random development. And I mentioned, you know, you mentioned the truck stops. I can say it too. I work in trucking. Rather than have two or
no,
three.
No offense. I know.
Yeah, rather than have 2 or 3 truck stops pop up and kind of the stuff that comes with that, I would rather see high-end planned, well-thought-out development, which I think is a good thing.
What about the people who don't think that the state of Indiana should be involved in economic development and development in general like this is? What's your take on that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I hear from those people. I talk with those people. I can understand maybe a little bit where they're coming from. But I will say that the climate, the economic climate we're in, and this is a more of a global here in the United States as well, these companies, some of the massive scale that these companies are looking to do, it's simply something a private investor, private developer, real estate developer would not have the resources to do. And a lot of these companies that come in, like Lilly, one wanted to come in and, you know, make a $3.1 billion investment somewhere. They chose Boone County. Any company doesn't want to have negotiations and you know, they want sites ready. They don't want to have to negotiate with 20, 25, 30 landowners. It also has to do with speed and being able to get things done. One of the things I've learned in this process of talking to state officials, businesses, local officials, is what used to maybe be a 12 to 24 month, 36 process for a business to decide they want to put a new factory somewhere, develop somewhere, is now maybe a 3 to 6 to 9 month project. Things just move faster at a greater speed. And I think that's where it's important to have state involvement. Also with incentives. And I sometimes do have heartburn over incentives. I'm like, Should we offer incentives for businesses to come? And that's just not here in Boone County or Indiana, but it's anywhere. And the thing is, to attract some of these high-end jobs, you got to offer businesses some incentives, something to want to come to your location. And it's a variety of incentives.
Well, for one thing, once they get here, they're not leaving as a general rule. I mean, over the years, people have been critical of the tax abatement of the Lebanon Business Park. But more than 90% of the companies that moved into the Lebanon Business Park with the help of tax abatement are still there. And many of them have substantially expanded their operation. And they're here and they're going to stay here. Now, there have been a couple that have gone out of business or filed bankruptcy, but for the most part, or merged. Most part, they're still here and they're still growing. And it's a good economic driver. Well, let's keep talking. What about the gun debate? We hear a lot about mass shootings every week in this country. We have these mass shootings. We spend a little bit of time talking about mental health. Is there any meaningful legislation that's possible to get a hold of this gun situation, or is it just beyond the writing of a new law on guns?
Well, you know, it does seem, unfortunately and very sadly, you hear more and more on the news of somebody decided to have a mass shooting somewhere, or something happens. Even in downtown Indianapolis, we read the news and see on the news of shootings almost every night. And I don't know exactly what the answer is, but I think we need to continue to focus on getting guns out of the hands of bad guys. I think there are some people, bad guys, who are mentally ill, mentally unstable. I think we need to focus there. Also need to focus on enforcing the law. I forget the statistic I heard the other day, but a lot of what's happening, particularly I'm going to go back to Marion County and Indianapolis, are repeat offenders who probably need to be locked up or kept in jail. And you also have your mental health, your mental health piece. I want to come back to it because it's so important. And I hope some of what we do with Senate Bill 1 and more resources for mental health, getting away the stigma, just trying to make people more knowledgeable, hopefully that will make some headway there. But we need to do something. And with this gun debate, we need to make sure focus our attention stays on getting the guns out of the hands of bad guys. You know, there are a lot of good law-abiding citizens who want guns to protect themselves, protect their homes, families, to hunt, and that's okay. I don't think we need to make more laws to be more restrictive on them, but we need to focus on the bad guys and keeping the guns out of their hands.
I hear talk about our property tax and our income tax systems being reviewed, the structure being considered. Is there a better way to raise money for the state and local governments to operate? Is that a process that's going to be underway for the next couple of years?
Yes, it will. Actually, it's something looking forward to. We passed Senate Bill 3, which essentially will set up a task force to review our entire tax system here in Indiana. It started as a kind of an income tax, maybe find a way to go to zero income tax like many other states have. But we're going to look at our entire system, take a deep dive into income tax, property tax, sales tax, essentially every tax we have here in Indiana, and really ask ourselves, are we doing it the best way? Is there a better way to do it? Is it fair? Is it equal? And
Of course, fair. Yeah, you know as well as I do. It depends on who's paying it.
It is.
But if we get rid of the income tax, that's fine. We get rid of the income tax, but you're going to have to raise the revenue some other way.
You are. $8 billion.
$8 billion. So sales tax, property tax, some other form of user tax. I don't know what the options are, but I'm sure we could come up with a list. And there may be a better way, but you're always going to have somebody who wants to pay less or thinks some group should pay less. That, by definition, requires some other group to pay more, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And, either way, if we got rid of income tax, next year, you're still going to have to make up $8 million from somewhere. So that's where we're going to take a deep dive. I personally am really excited about it. Also, we talk about income tax, but property tax is going to be a part of that. Had a lot of discussions with property taxes, and I know property taxes went up. And we're going to kind of, I personally believe if someone's lived in their home 30 years and, they haven't, had the same job, if their bill goes up 30, 40, 50%, that, to me, that's a problem. And we need to address that and figure out what is a workable solution there.
Well, I'm all for you to take a look at it and see what can be done. Campaigning, I know we're getting toward the end here. How much time do you have to spend campaigning and fundraising in your role as a state senator?
Yeah, well, it's good. I am on the ballot. We'll be on the ballot coming up here in about a year, in 2024. And when it comes to campaigning, I always say my personal philosophy is if I'm a good senator, I won't need to campaign a whole lot. That's where, you know, if you're visible, if you're out there, if you have communication, dialogue with people, to me, people will get to know you and that will kind of take care of itself. But obviously, as you know, involved in politics, you're always looking at ways to get, you know, more connections with people, get to know people better. Fundraising, it is something in the political world you have to do. You have to constantly try to raise money. I will say for me personally, you know, you kind of focus more as you get closer to the election time. But it's part of it. It's one of those things that's just, you know, you got to have a good message. You got to connect with people. And you also got to raise funds, too, in order to keep the job. But by and large, if I'm a good senator, I feel that takes care of a lot of my campaigning.
Well, and you've got a good core of support from people in central Indiana that appreciate the job you're doing. At this point, do you have any sense that you're likely to have opposition from the Democrats next time, or do you know, is it too early to know?
Yeah, it's probably too early to know. I don't know. I guess I'm always assuming I will get an opponent, but you know, we're going to run like we're 5-10 points down, but hopefully end up with you know, like say with no opponent.
The district is pretty well set. In other words, the boundaries have been established, and at least for the next few years, you know what district you're going to be representing,
yes.
Don't you?
Yes, I do. Yep.
So what committees are you on at the moment, Brian?
Yeah, I really enjoy my committees. They align well with my passion areas. Tax and fiscal policy is a committee I really enjoy, spend a lot of time on. Education committee, obviously it's half our budget, so tremendously important and kind of doubly invested with two young kids. And also serve on insurance and financial institutions, all which I enjoy all those committees and kind of the areas. And again, they align well with my passion.
How do people get a hold of you if they want to talk to you about an issue or a concern they have?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, people are willing, if they see me out and about, happy to have a conversation. But got an email. The best one is just S as in Sam, 7@iga.in.gov. That's the best way for people to email me. Also, feel free to call anytime, 317-919-2025. Try to be responsive there and just tell people to don't answer, leave a message. I'll give them a call back.
All right. Well, Senator, I appreciate you coming in on a busy weekend, Mother's Day weekend. Talk about what's going on in your life and the life of the Indiana Senate. I wish you well, and I appreciate you coming in and talking to us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Our guest has been Senator Brian Buchanan, Boone County resident, member of the Indiana Senate. Been doing a great job and is learning. He's only been in there 5 years, but he's a shining light for us. I appreciate his time today. I don't know who we'll have on our show next week. We'll have another person in to talk about the goings-on in our community. I hope you have a great Mother's Day weekend. We'll see you next week on What's Up Boone County.